The Legacy Committee will come to order. We don't have a quorum yet, so we won't approve the very fine minutes that have been prepared by our legislative assistant, Leah Patton, who did her first minutes. We'll pay special attention to them when the time comes here. Let's see. Before we proceed too much farther here, this is the Legacy Committee, and of course there are a lot of social things are part of the legacy of the state, participating in our waters and such. Representative Miller, do you have any report on any activities that you participated with regarding a lake on Saturday?
I saw a picture.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. You know, they always give me the microphone that doesn't work, Mr. Chair. That's probably for a purpose. But we, myself, let me go down the line. Senator Coonan, Representative Baker, Representative Sarah Anderson, and who else was in the picture? No, whoever was there is going to be offended. Representative Drew Christensen, and I'm missing one other one.
Howe?
Yes, Representative Jeff Howe. We participated in the Special Olympics Polar Plunge up in Green Lake and Spicer. And so there is pictures of us online jumping into a frozen lake. Shows the intelligence we have.
Was it cold?
It wasn't warm. It was good.
See, we have a radio program that we do Saturday mornings in Wilmer, KWLM. And there are four of us there. Three chose to go jump in a lake and swim with ice cubes. One decided it was better just to stay in the studio and talk to the radio announcer.
Yeah. But seriously, though, Mr. Chair, while you give me the opportunity, it was for Special Olympics, and the number that I heard was, I think, over 300 people jumped in to participate. So, and I know there's other polar plunges in the area, so yeah. I encourage. I have a son who will be participating in Special Olympics, so I appreciate the support of what they do.
Yeah, and I think it's a great thing. I don't want to discourage people from doing this. It was a fine show of courage, and I admire the courage and dedication of folks who do that.
Mr. Chair, he's not here, but seeing Senator Coonan in a bathing suit was the act of courage. So. Sorry that he wasn't here.
All right, moving right along. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I have $100 for you to jump in if you...
I'll double it.
Well, all right, moving right along. We do have rules. So... feel free to look over your rules there. Number three, it's nice to let the legislative assistant know ahead of time if you need to be excused. But if you're not here, and we're probably just going to excuse you anyway. But if you can, let us know. Number 10, of course, is the most important rule, and that is if I decide to change anything, I can just do it. So otherwise we'll pretty much stick by these rules. All right, with that, who do we have now? What? Well, one more for quorum and then we'll do it. All right, we are going to begin today taking up kind of where we left off last time with the Minnesota Historical Society and Mr. Kelleher. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society, and thanks to you and the committee for the opportunity that we had last week to do a quick review of the projects and programs that have been accomplished with legacy funding over the last year. We, as you recall, worked through a booklet that looks like this, and if any of you want a copy of the booklet, we certainly have a few extras. Our task for today is to speak briefly on what our vision for the future is and where we're looking to go into the future with legacy funding. I think you have in your folder a sheet that looks like this. This is the request from the Minnesota History Coalition. And the Minnesota History Coalition is an umbrella group that represents 12 organizations, which in turn represent dozens of other individual history-related organizations, which represent thousands of people who carry out history work and are interested in history work as members of various organizations. So this group has been together since the start of legacy funding, and these organizations represent such disciplines as archaeology, genealogy, represents independent scholars, historic preservation, local history museums, the Minnesota Digital Library, the Historic Preservation Corps that you heard about last week, and then a couple other organizations, including Minnesota's Historic Northwest, which represents the organizations doing history work up in that part of the state. So our request for the next biennium with legacy funds is $41 million for the biennium from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for history-related programs. The sheet outlines the various programs as we discussed last week, grants programs, statewide history programs, partnership programs, and I'll just take a quick mention that there's been a great deal of demand in the partnership category where history-related organizations and even some non-history organizations have gotten together to share resources, share knowledge, share expertise to work on a history project and carry out that project, and in the process expanding their own capacity and ability to do this history work. Final couple of things have been a statewide survey of historical and archaeological sites and the Minnesota Digital Library, which is a consortium of Minitex, the Minnesota Historical Society, and a number of other organizations which are working to bring historic resources to your desktop and make that body of collections available. The coalition further recommends that the Historic Resources Advisory Committee continue to serve as the citizen advisory body that makes recommendations on the large grants for legacy grant programs. This body of volunteers has given hundreds and hundreds of hours to make decisions and review history projects. And I would say also that the demand has been extremely high for those grant programs in particular, as well as the other categories. But in recent years, when that committee has had on the order of $3 million to work with, they've received upwards of $5 million worth of requests for history programs for them to deal with. Mr. Chair, with that, I think that sums up what the History Coalition's request is for the next biennium, and I would again express our appreciation on behalf of the hundreds and thousands of people that have not only done the work but benefited from the work to preserve our history and build community in the process of doing history work.
Thank you, Mr. Kelleher. And just so that I have a couple questions here. First, how much did you get last year, last biennium?
Mr. Chair, I don't have that number right in front of me, but I think it was on the order of $26 million for the biennium for all history programs.
Would you repeat that, please?
Was it? I don't know if you have the number.
No, right. I don't.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of $26 million for the biennium for history programs.
Okay, thank you. And out of your, just so everyone else understands, which one of those categories distributes the most money to our local historical societies?
Mr. Chair, the grants program is the primary mechanism for distributing funds across the state locally to local county historical societies, but other organizations as well that do that work.
And also, of the large grant, how many people are on that granting committee?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the exact number, but it's somewhere around a dozen and a half people that make those decisions.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelleher, I'm curious as to how you came up with your proposal. Did the Historic Resources Advisory Committee have any input on that, or do they just evaluate projects?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, the Historic Resources Advisory Committee's job is primarily to do the evaluation of the grant applicants. The Minnesota History Coalition is a separate umbrella organization of the various history organizations that are requesting funds. That group looked at the demand that's out there, the projects that they want to accomplish over the next 2 years, and also looked at the proportion of the funds that they thought should go into history, which is roughly a third.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Kelleher, so the Minnesota History Coalition is the group that came up with the recommendations. Are there any citizen members represented in that coalition?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, the History Coalition is made up of the organizations that you see on the bottom of this sheet, and they're primarily people who are paid staff for county historical societies and also volunteers who help out with those organizations. So it's, in a sense, it's a citizen group because it's people who work in that field, but I'm making the distinction between the HRAC, Historic Resources Advisory Committee, which is a volunteer group, and the History Coalition, which is more of an advocacy group.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Kelleher, just and over the years, I felt you've done an excellent job with the reporting that you do with this particular publication. If you haven't looked it over, I urge members to do so. And this will be a question that I ask consistently here. The process that has been established in terms of how the money is allocated, the reporting and everything, are you satisfied with it? Do you have suggestions at all?
Mr. Chair, we think that the process that has been in place for now three biennia is working pretty well. It distributes money evenly across the state. All counties have been represented in the grants program. And we think it works pretty well. As I mentioned, there's some demand in the partnership category. I think there's some growth in people wanting to work together. So I think that's something that I know you all have expressed interest in seeing groups working together. So that process has expanded as we've moved forward on this program. Okay. But we appreciate, you know, your openness to fine-tuning the language and the process for this.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Kelleher, the problem I've had, and I'm not pointing to a specific problem with the historical grants, I think it's come through more in terms of the arts grants, is the ability of newer groups and less established groups to access the kind of funds. I mean, groups that don't have a long history in the state yet, but will be having an important history, and how important it is not to lose them at the start. And so I don't know what kind of help they're getting or what, and when you look at doing a grant specifically on the qualifications, they probably don't match the qualifications of people who've been doing it for 140 years, whatever the number is. And so what can we do about that?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Kahn, I would answer that in two ways, and one is that we have seen a lot of groups come in, apply and receive grants that are, you might call them non-traditional or not traditional history organizations, but there are other organizations that want to preserve their own history and share that history with their community. So there are lots and lots of groups that have come in and done that. The other thing I would say is that we have a field services operation that travels extensively. My colleague David Grabitsky is here. He puts on thousands and thousands of miles traveling around the state, helping smaller organizations, in many cases startup organizations, be successful in applying for a grant. We want the organizations to be successful, and we will walk them through the process and make sure that they have a successful grant. Some of them take a couple of tries, and we encourage them to keep trying and improve their grant application. But we want to have good quality grants that spend the money well and are going to be carried out in a quality, successful way.
Representative Kahn.
I'm not sure this is exactly history, but one of the issues we've had is the preservation of languages, particularly of tribes. And I don't know if that's something that the Historical Society... I know that something has been done. We did a grant in that for the Dakota language, I believe it was, and in terms of the, some of the last surviving fluent speakers were involved in that. Is that something that you guys have been involved in?
Mr. Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, that language preservation effort, which is really important, yeah, because as you point out, there are languages that are dying out, that are not going to be here if we don't do something about it. Those efforts have been done in a couple of ways. There have been direct appropriations through the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and they're here today if you want to hear some more about that. There also have been a number of projects that have gone through the grants category and the partnership category, where someone wants to do a very specific project and maybe make a book or an online encyclopedia. Those kinds of things have been done through the grants process to further preserve native languages.
That brings to mind, Mr. Kelleher, a recent request that I have. If someone, this might sound self-serving, but it's not me. If someone wished to publish a book or write a book dealing with some historical topic, assuming that it's for a nonprofit, is that eligible for your consideration?
Mr. Chair, we generally don't make grants to individuals. That's been our longstanding practice. But we, in response to some of the independent researchers who have asked to be able to access legacy funds, we have a scholars program where there's sort of another layer of coordination that helps those individuals to get a research project off the ground, and they work with staff from the Minnesota Historical Society to accomplish that.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I don't have my cheat sheet here. Your name again?
It's David Kelleher from
Kelleher, Minnesota. Okay. Mr. Kelleher, kind of going off of what Representative Kahn asked, do you have kind of numbers or statistics or any way of showing the number of people that are awarded grants for the first time versus multiple times? You get what I'm asking?
Yeah.
Kind of the breakdown, because when we're asking, what are the opportunities for new people to come in, do you have those numbers available, and can we see those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, I don't have those numbers at my fingertips, but we can get those numbers and get back to the committee on what those statistics
are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelleher. I think that would be good. We are getting more questions about are there new folks, new groups getting these periodically, or is it just the same all the time, as Representative Kahn pointed out or questioned? Anything else? Any other questions? Well, thank you, Mr. Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your past support. We appreciate it.
Next on our agenda is the presentation by the Minnesota Arts Board. I believe we have Sue Jens. And as Ms. Jens is getting situated there, we do have a quorum now. And I'm sure that Representative Wills has had time to go over the minutes. And would you move approval of the January 26th minutes, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I approve the minutes.
Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Ms. Jens?
Mr. Chair.
Identify yourself, please.
I will. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sue Jens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board.
And with me today is Brenda Byron from the Prairie Lakes Regional Arts Council in Waseca. We're going to share in this presentation. I will kick off and then hand off to Brenda. We appreciate your time. We appreciate the chance to give you a bit of an update about the work that we do, how we have invested legacy funds in the past, and what our plans are for the future. And this is not my computer, so bear with me. Some of you already know this. For those of you who have been on the committee in the past, you know that we are a state agency. The statute that authorizes the Arts Board is 129D. We exist to stimulate and encourage the creation, performance, and appreciation of the arts throughout the state of Minnesota. Here's the trivia question. Minnesota was the second state in the country to place an arts agency within state government. It did so in 1903. Ooh. The current structure, the current name, has been in place since 1977, and at that time, the Regional Arts Council system was created, a process of decentralized grant making that we'll talk about in just a minute. It's a model that has been followed and emulated in other states and now is being copied in other places as well. We have a board of 11 citizen members, all volunteers. They are appointed by the governor. They serve at the with the consent of the Senate. We have a full-time FTE of 21 staff members at the Arts Board. The Regional Arts Councils have their own staffs. I think the beauty of the work that we do is that we are very, very volunteer citizen-driven. We use 250 to 300 volunteers per year. In our most recent grant round, they contributed 13,000 volunteer hours to read applications and make recommendations on how to spend the funds. So it's not my staff or our 11 board members. It's citizens from throughout the state. I've included in your handout some of the key duties that the board is responsible for. Chief among them are the first two, to review requests for funding and then to distribute grants, loans, and other forms of assistance. It is our principal activity. We also offer advice to other state agencies or others who have issues related to the arts. We run the state's Percent for Art program, which is not funded through Legacy. That's funded through the Capital Investment Bill. And also by statute, we are the fiscal agent for the 11 regional arts councils who receive block grants. The reason for the 11, and Representative Kahn can tell you even better than I, that the regional arts council system was created so that there would be local decision making, that some of the funds that are appropriated are handled by local boards. The intent of those dollars is to create and stimulate arts development at the city, community, county level, and that's what each of those 11 councils do. They were started as programs of their regional development commissions. All of them now have gone on and graduated and become separate 501c3 organizations. So the block grants are made to a 501c3 that manages those grants. They develop plans that meet their own specific needs and the opportunities for their regions. The Arts Board has the authority to promulgate rules. So the rules that regulate how regional arts councils operate are in Chapter 1900. And I've got the citation here if you're interested. Basically, they establish programs and services. They define the criteria that they will use to award those grants. And then those local boards of those organizations have grant-making authority, as well as the Arts Board. The Legacy Amendment obviously is significant for us. Just a reminder, the funds that the Arts Board receives comes out of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. The one that receives 19.75% of the sales tax proceeds. Funds must be spent on arts, arts education, arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage, and we're well positioned to do those, all of those sorts of activities. In the packet that you, I think, received, you have three documents that I won't review with you, but you have them. When the Legacy Amendment was passed, we created a vision, a set of guiding principles, and some strategic goals that the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils together created. And they're in the back of your packet. They're pages A1 through A3. You have those if you have questions about them. I'm certainly happy to answer that at the end. The Arts Board has received funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund since fiscal year 2010, the first year that those funds were available. And I'm giving you the appropriations for the current biennium. And again, this is in your packet. We receive general fund dollars. We have for decades. And then the legacy funds, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund dollars, supplement what we're able to do over and above those, that traditional source of public funding received. During this biennium, the 14-15 biennium, we're receiving $26.75 million per year, $53.5 million for the biennium. And you'll see that it's roughly divided, that the Arts Board manages about 70% of those funds, and the Regional Arts Councils manage approximately 30% of the funds. We're in fiscal year 15, so we don't have data for the year yet. The year is not yet finished, but I've given you a summary of what has been happened in fiscal year 2014. You'll see that the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils together received more than 3,700 applications for funding. We made more than 2,200 grants. The total requested amount, and I think this is the most important number on this page at the bottom of the second column, the total requested for fiscal 14 was nearly $50 million. We had $31 million that we could award to those projects and those programs. So now we'll tell you a little bit about what some of those projects, programs, organizations, and applicants are. I'll start talking about some of the things that the Arts Board funds, and then I will hand off to Brenda, and she'll talk about some of the things that are happening at the Regional Arts Council level. The Arts Board had two grant programs, an operating support and an artist initiative grant program, to fund organizations and individual artists. Those existed before the legacy funds. We continue to support those programs. They are core, they are bedrock to the success of the arts community, and so we continue to fund those activities. Artist initiative grants help an artist who has a special project or an idea that they would like to work on, and we can make a grant to that. So, Chairman Erdahl, your question about can an artist get a grant to write a book? They can. That's one of the things that we might be able to do. In operating support, we provide funds so that organizations can make their work more available and accessible. And many of the grantees are organizations you've heard of, the Guthrie, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, the Minnesota Opera. But that's a statewide program. And so organizations like the Paradise Center in Faribault receives funding, the Lanesboro Art Center in Lanesboro, the North House Folk School in Grand Marais, the Holmes Theater in Detroit Lakes. It's a statewide program providing funding. One of the conditions of receiving operating support is that there has to be significant education and outreach that's done. In 2014, there were somewhere around 13,000 education or outreach activities that those organizations did. So they're using the dollars to make their work as available as possible. Arts Tour, as the name implies, sends artists and organizations around the state. Arts Access is a great program that tries to break down barriers between individuals who are not well served in the arts and organizations that would like to serve them better. And some examples that we made a grant to the Central Square in Glenwood, where artists could work with older adults with memory loss, and they created a play and presented the play to share their stories while they still have that memory that they can share. Or the Red Wing Arts Association has worked with veterans groups to capture and share and express stories that veterans have about their military experience. Children's Theater has a program for people with autism, sensory-friendly performances so that young people who have autism can go to the theater when they oftentimes can't. Partners in Arts Participation is a grant program that funds human service and health organizations. So the White Earth Head Start program received a grant to work with Climb Theater from the Twin Cities, 500 preschoolers working on a theater project. Or the Lao Assistance program in Minnesota showed the work of new immigrants and refugees. We have two programs in arts education where we're investing arts education funds. And those go to schools like the Lac qui Parle School District, which received grants to bring in resident artists, or a school district in Plymouth brought in artists to work with their students that had disabilities or are at risk. And it also goes to arts organizations like the McPhail Center, which has a distance learning program so that their teachers work with the Kirkhoven-Murdoch-Sundberg School District and teach students directly, but also help the teachers develop their skills and capacity to teach in the arts. And then in the final category is the arts and cultural heritage. The arts have much to do to bring different cultures, different groups together. The Arts Board funds community festivals. Often it's a Parks and Rec program, like the Moorhead Celtic Festival that's sponsored by their Parks and Rec program, or the Culture Fest in Owatonna is another one of our grantees. It also could be a folk or a traditional arts program. We're funding the Dakota Wekoan group in Moreton to hand down traditional Dakota arts practices from the master artist, older generation, to younger artists who'd like to learn those skills. Or Project Fine, an organization in Winona that works with refugees and immigrants and helps them pass on their cultural traditions to their new neighbors in Winona. So those are just a very few examples of the hundreds and hundreds of grants we've made. I would like to, at this point, hand off to Brenda, who could talk about some of the things that are happening at the Regional Arts Council level.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I'm Brenda Byron.
Just one second.
Yep.
Ms. Byron, we'll...
She wants questions for you.
A few questions, I think. First, Representative Miller, by the way, Representative Miller, the Kirkhoven-Murdoch-Sundberg School District, do you know who represents that?
That would be me, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Representative Miller.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Jans. I commend you on the Theater for Autism for People. I mean, my son has autism, but I have a friend who actually directs programming for autistic students in theater, and there seems to be a fantastic connection there. And one of the boys who never speaks any other time speaks when he's up there acting. So it's a pretty remarkable thing. The quick question I have on the arts education, I don't know if this is the place or if there's another place, but when it comes to like secondary education, are there grants available for performing arts? I don't want to say curriculum, that's too strong of a word, but the performing arts, so like the music programs in the schools, the theater, stuff like that, are there grants available in that area? Because you had mentioned that there is some grant money to bring in artists to a school, but is there kind of some programming sort of grants available also?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, the Arts Board does not provide funding for schools to create curriculum, for public schools to create curriculum, or for secondary schools to create curriculum, because the arts are part of the state's education standards and requirements. And so our understanding is that would be, it could be considered supplanting the funds that schools should be using to meet the state's education requirements in the arts.
Representative Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's why I was afraid to use the word curriculum. I didn't mean it that way. But I think for just north of my district, but definitely part of the people that live in my district up in Wilmer High School, that's the experience that I have. And they have Music Matters, for example, or they have some things that they do for their musical performances during the year, something like that, that are really aren't part of the curriculum, mm-hmm. or because of cutbacks in budget for curriculum or whatever, they have these kind of external parent-driven sort of groups that try to support the arts in the school. So that's the area that I'm kind of asking about, if there's funding available for that or if that's somewhere else.
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller. We provide the funding that the Arts Board provides in arts learning could be used for professional development or for other kinds of out-of-school activities. Our goal is to add on to what the schools are able to provide. And again, that's what the Arts Board is funding. I'm sure that Ms. Byron, when she talks about how arts education funds are being used at the Regional Arts Council level, there may be some additional examples there.
Okay. Thank you.
There is, yeah.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Kahn?
Yeah, again, I guess I asked this of the Historical Society, and we discussed this last year, too. The problem that I have is how newly established groups get into it. When you look at your rules for grants, there was some fairly strong thing about a 3-year operating experience and a certain level of budget and so forth, which was pretty impossible for any new group to meet. And I wonder what's, I think part of the answer is that the regional arts councils take care of some of that. And I know purposely the regional arts councils are kind of, their budgets aren't really distributed according to population. So it's a little harder in the metro, you know. And I guess many of these things may have been changed since we first set it up. And I don't want a strict population criteria. But I think there's some problem with newly established groups getting it. And of course, I'm very interested in the immigrant communities and so forth. Mm-hmm. Then a very specific, I don't know if this is an announcement or something, which I believe received legacy funding, it's probably arts, although it may have been history, is the movie The Jingle Dress. Is that anybody's name? Well, it's got a legacy line on it somewhere, and that's been accepted at the Sundance Festival. So someone should follow up on that.
Ms. Jens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, just to respond to some of the points that you have raised, you're absolutely right. In one of our grant programs, the Operating Support Grant Program, we have a 2-year requirement. An organization has to have existed for 2 years in order to be eligible, and they have to have a budget size of, it's $160,000. But that same requirement isn't true in any of the other grant programs. And so an organization that is newer or younger could come into any of those other grant programs with a project. And as you point out, many of those very young organizations, startup organizations, often receive their first few grants at the Regional Arts Council level before they come to the Arts Board and start to request funds. I don't know about the specific grant that you referenced about the Jingle Dress. We fund, again, 500 to 600 grants a year. It could be that it was one of the projects that came out of something that we funded. I certainly will follow up and see if I can find that. We do make grants to filmmakers in our individual artist grant program. We have a media arts category. So it might be there.
That's a likely place it would. But you should be bragging about it as soon as it happens. So you should make them tell you instead of relying on my possibly inaccurate memory to do it.
Thank you. And Representative Kahn, who was chair when that money was granted for that one?
I don't think the chair had anything to do with
no, just
you, I'm sure.
Well,
I'm sure it took long enough so I had nothing to do with it.
Well, then I'll
particularly
take credit.
since the filmmaker is a friend of mine and it was filmed in my neighborhood. So
Were you part of the production?
No, but I just kind of watched part of it.
You couldn't get a role as extra or anything?
As a Native American moving from the reservation to Minneapolis, not quite.
All right.
unless you consider New Jersey, an exodus from New Jersey part of that.
It sounds like a whole new movie. Ms. Byron.
Good afternoon. I'm Brenda Byron. I live in Waseca, so I'm the director of Prairie Lakes Regional Arts Council. We serve the 9-county area in south central Minnesota, and I've been the director for the past 25 years. So we've funded a lot of organizations and artists in our area, and I'm pleased to be here with Sue today. As we had said, that regional arts councils fund small and mid-sized arts organizations, community groups, and schools to provide local arts activities, and many of those grants wouldn't be possible without our state general fund and this new legacy money. So our legacy money has almost tripled the grants that we can award. So to answer Representative Miller's question, yes, we do fund schools, but it has to be organized as a residency where they're paying an artist to come in the school and work with students. It can be a live arts performance, though, or mini workshop, so it can be structured several ways. But the school needs to be the applicant, and then they're paying the artists, and it has to be separate from curriculum. And in the grant, they explain how does it fit within the curriculum, though, and how does it add to what they're already doing. So a lot of the regional arts councils do that. And also, we had talked about that our grant sizes do vary. So they're small, from $2,000 to $8,000 in our Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. They also match those grants, 50% cash match for the organizational grants and 10% for schools. So getting back to how schools have limited resources maybe to do those extra things, we're trying to not have barriers. So the school only has to match at 10%, maybe with a local fundraiser or some business donations they get. Anything specific you wanted to jump in there with, the project you were talking about, though? And I am familiar with a little bit about Southwest Minnesota. They have similar grants to us.
Representative Miller.
I'll be brief. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm thinking of is, and as the legacy is meant not to supplant, again, what I'm talking about may be something for the Education Committee, but I can tell you that what they're doing in Wilmer is probably doing at the other school districts in my area. They are fundraising. They're selling fruit and stuff like that just so that they can have a music program. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say that if the intention of this is to expand the arts, and it's not to supplant already spent money, but to support, or whatever the other word is, that this might be an area that the Arts Council should consider, because, as you know, if we can educate our children into the arts, there's not only an education value, but also a future appreciation of the arts. And so if we can't do it in the education budget, then I'd like to see something here, because I think it fits within the scope of what we're intended to do.
Well, Representative Miller, that one with the I'm sure the supplement debate would get a full hearing on that. That's, you know, we have gray areas, and we have some areas that are a little more definitive, and this one would open up a lot of discussion.
Okay. Well, I guess to expand on that, too, so a lot of schools might have a guest clinician come in and work with the kids and be their guest conductor at a concert they were doing, or work with the kids individually on instrument development. We have had a percussion residency in a couple of our schools, and so we're letting those teachers take the lead on that. And that's what it really means, is those dedicated community members and teachers that want to see extra arts activities happen. Those are the folks writing the grants. Over half of the arts groups that we fund have all volunteer, and so they don't have paid staff, and so it takes a lot of dedicated people to do those grants. And what else did I want to say? I want to jump in there because some of you had asked about kinds of project grants. So we fund community bands, choirs, theaters, arts and music festivals, similar to the State Arts Board, but smaller in scope, dance classes, performances, literary events, public art, visual art classes and exhibits. And Representative Torkelson is from my region, so I was going to comment on a few of the grants we give in Brown County, because Brown County in the New Ulm area is very active in the arts, and they're just a similar example all around the state. So they have a Suzuki school, so they hire clinicians to do a semi-annual POPS camp and piano institute for their students. They have the Grand Center for Arts and Culture, so an art center in local communities is often funded, doing performances, classes. New Ulm Actors Theater. We also have Friends of German Park, so they put on a Native American dance and music along with polka music in their in several locations depending on the weather. And I've attended that, and that's a very unique combination. So often arts groups are doing disciplinary things with groups that don't often work together.
Ms. Byron, did you participate in the polka?
I actually do polka. I am German, and I, yes.
Come down to Representative Torkelson's area. They do a lot of it there, too.
We've had a couple coffee parties for him. We have not polka'd, but I had been to Fairmont, and I have polka'd with the Representative Gunther from there at their Grand Center for Arts and, yeah, so in
Is
Fairmont.
There a film on this?
No, but he'll attest to it, and his wife said, you know, he's not feeling as well, but he can still dance a little, and I said, okay, let's get up and do it, and he did. So, can ask him about that.
I'm guessing we will. Continue, please.
Also in New Ulm, they have an Irish cultural festival coming up that we funded, and so not just German and polka music. They also have a chamber music series and Oktoberfest. And the general Oktoberfest, again, brings thousands of people to New Ulm, but we don't fund their main entertainment, but we fund the kids' activities, the organ grinder, some children's plays. So we're always funding the extra things that an organization or communities are doing through community ed. We were talking about historical sites. Those organizations are also eligible to apply to regional arts councils if they're doing a specific project that benefits the whole community. Not their historic programming, but they're doing a music and arts event. Bluegrass music, of course, in all of those small towns. I'll go on to some other things. I gathered a little bit of information from the other regional arts council directors. So in Representative Miller's area, too, they have the Meander Art Crawl, which brings thousands of people to Granite Falls and those surrounding communities, Milan Village Arts School, the Appleton 52 Wing Restoration Committee. So all of those groups are getting grants from Southwestern Minnesota Arts and Humanities Council. In Faribault, they have several activities happening with their Paradise Theater, Minnesota Academy for the Blind, so they're doing special projects in the arts that they would come directly to the Regional Arts Council for. In Brainerd, they also have a music festival. They have the Crossing Arts Alliance, so they're getting grants. Their Legacy Curl group also performs in Baxter. So there's all kinds of groups replicated around the state that are small and mid-sized that are coming to Regional Arts Councils for funding, and they're very successful. They're getting a lot of community people excited about the arts as participants and as audience, and it's been a very uplifting thing for Greater Minnesota and positive things that they can point to for their community that sets them apart from other towns.
Mr. Chair, I have
Ms. Jens.
Two more things to show you.
Oh, I was going to do the last, the previous slide. One of the things that we talked about, Cindy, who works with me, our youth scholarship program. So a lot of times when we're talking about impacting youth, one of the new things we were able to do 5 years ago was set up a youth scholarship program where kids could get a $300 scholarship to take lessons. So it could be in music, dance, violin, piano, drumming, flute. And so that scholarship they apply for, we've developed it, started out with 50 kids, now we're up to 97 kids getting a $300 scholarship. And those kids live in 22 different communities in our 9-county area, so it's broad range. And the scholarship's paid directly to the kids, to their instructor. So the kids are keeping track of how they use the money for lessons, but it really keeps them involved. And when they have tough choices for working part-time jobs, they're going to stay involved in their arts lessons as well, singing and dancing and playing music. And I think that's been a really great thing that's happened, is that we've been able to come full circle with getting the young people excited about the arts, and then their parents get involved, and then the community really benefits because everybody wants to come and see those performances.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Yes. One of the things I've been trying to look for is interconnectivity between all the parts of Legacy, but also interconnectivity within a certain part. And I know one of the things that was some people might have thought as a conflict of trying to take money away from arts was Representative Murphy's insistence on libraries being included. So one of the things I think I'm kind of interested in is, have we done anything with arts programs connected with libraries? With that library, is it a separate grant now or something?
Separate.
So is there any connection with that?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, we haven't done direct connection between the Arts Board and the library system. I know that there has been more activity at the regional level where the artists who are, let's say, on the Regional Arts Council's roster are the ones who are hired to do programming in the library. And it is a completely separate appropriation. So how those dollars are being spent at the libraries really is determined by the libraries. One of our concerns has been, is there a way to not create new infrastructure? If we have rosters and if we have organizations that we know are willing to do programming, is there a way to use those rather than creating new rosters or new grant programs elsewhere? So I'm sure that there is more that we could be doing, but there is some activity happening.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point that out. That's a direction I'd like to see expanded in the future.
Ms. Jones, continue.
I wanted to leave you with two last slides. This one, I think, is the most important piece of information that I can share with you. In the 2012-2013 biennium, our combined activities, funded activities, reached 24 million people. So you see two of us sitting here today, but what you need to imagine is the thousands of artists who are standing behind us, the hundreds of arts organizations who are with us, the arts the senior centers, the healthcare centers, the community organizations, the other nonprofits who benefit from the work that we do. We don't come to you with a single project in mind, because in the arts there is no one single project that would meet all interests. Seniors need certain kinds of programming that's different than preschoolers. And so it's important to us that we are trying to be as broad, as diverse as we possibly can be. We are efficient. We think we use the dollars well. We reach all 87 counties. And we prioritize, which leads me to something that is in your document, but it's not in the slides. We gave you our one-page request. The issue about prioritizing, we are bringing you a request for a slight increase for next year. Right now, our appropriation for the biennium is $53.5 million. This request is for $57.4 million. It's a small-ish request, and I know that millions of dollars are not small. And we do that in part because I mentioned and I highlighted in my presentation that in 1 year, in 2014, we had $50 million of requests. And the Arts Board can award funds to about 43% of the applicants who come to us. And there are tremendous projects that we can't fund, that we would like to be able to fund. And so our request would be to use this statewide system in a way to get the dollars out to those projects that we think are the highest priorities, and to allow us to try to meet as many of the needs as we possibly can throughout the state through an increase in funding for the next biennium.
Thank you, Ms. Jens. Just to ask a question, do you have a statutorily dedicated percentage?
Mr. Chair, there is language in state statute that says a certain percentage should be appropriated to the Arts Board, yes.
And what, Ms. Jens, what is that percent?
Mr. Chair, it's 47% of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
And is, of course, we don't know exactly what the amount is going to be available to appropriate the next year, so you don't know if 57.4 is 47% of a number that you don't know.
Mr. Chair, I think it's 47% of a number that we don't know. I think you're right.
Okay.
I think it's based on projections, and it's also based on the needs. If if we were to have a slight increase, maybe we could fund half of the requests that we receive.
All right.
And that would be progress.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Byron, I really enjoyed your presentation. With my fancy little gadget here, I was able to look at your website, and thank you for having the logo for the Clean Water Legacy on your website. And when I looked at it further and deeper, it is an incredible list. You mentioned some of the projects, but I encourage members to look at it. It's far deeper, and it's pretty impressive. One of my ongoing questions that I have of this whole bill as it always keeps moving through is it's a little wearing my suburban hat a little bit. It's always complicated because I look at your website and I just think it's amazing what you're able to do. And when I look in, I think what happens sometimes is suburbia gets a little bit of not of a fair shake. Because I think some of our bigger dollars go to the wonderful institutions we have, perhaps in Representative Murphy's district or Representative Kahn's district in the bigger cities. And then I think, that is embodied in our whole number for the metro, and then it doesn't really make it to Freeburg's or Representative Will's district. We have wonderful potters and musicians like Free. I don't know if he wants to maybe write a music book or something. No, I don't know. But I just feel, you know, so I look at that list, and I know every year you kind of bring us a sheet, and it shows where these grants go in my community, and I can think of, I think last year there was like two or three grants, which are wonderful, and I hate, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm, but when you really look at it, it's, I mean, there's, when you went through each, like Representative Miller's district or Representative Torgelson's, they've got about, you know, I'm sure if I were to graph it or to look it out, I'm sure there's 10, 15 little going to a variety of wonderful projects. And I wish we could figure out a formula somehow to figure out to get some of it out to the suburban artists and to, because there's plenty of talent all over the state. And I don't want to take away from rural. I don't want to take away from, you know, so anyways, just figuring that out. It's always bugged me, and I'm sure if Representative Wills and I should get together and figure out some bipartisan army to represent suburbia.
Well, I will mention that there is the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council, and they do a lot of grants by county and a lot of suburban community activities. So I'll actually, your Regional Arts Council director is directly behind you, Jeff Prower from Metropolitan Regional Arts Council. So he has his ears on, and he will be sending you a list of the things from your district that were funded by the Regional Arts Council. Okay.
I've seen it for 5 years.
Okay. Okay, so it's a little slim, as you're saying. Okay. Here you go.
I know what I'm
thank you, Representative Lilly. Anything
thank you,
else?
Sir. No, that's thank you.
Ms. Byron, thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Ms. Byron for being here today and compliment her on the fine work that the Prairie Lakes Group does. And they not only take part in lots of these little grants, kids taking music lessons and all that sort of stuff. They're also improving their writing skills, because I get lots of thank you notes.
Representative Kahn.
Okay, this is an issue that it's actually was brought to me by my housemate member, Representative Loeffler, and it's the transportation funding to bring schools to theaters and so forth. Apparently there was some, my information could be totally out of date. There was some requirement that only allowed that across districts and across regional, or across regional boundaries. And there are, and of course many of the theater groups and historical exhibits and so forth are in the metro area. And so she said that the people in the schools, and there were kids in the schools in Northeast Minneapolis who had never been to any kind of professional theater and could not access this because you weren't able to use it within a region. As usual with my ability to use partial information, I have no idea what program this is or whose program. Mm-hmm. But I think a rule like that, that's not based on the kind of school but based on some arbitrary boundary, is not good for us, at least. Do you know anything about that? Good.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Ms. Jens.
Representative Kahn, I believe the program that Representative Loeffler is referring to is our Arts Tour program.
Okay.
And she and I have had conversations about this in the past, not this year. We have not spoken about it this year.
Plus, you haven't spoken to her yet.
Well, I have seen her, but we have not had this conversation. In the Arts Tour program, the purpose of that program is that we want Minnesotans all over the state to enjoy the amazing artists that we have. So we will fund an artist to perform outside of his or her own region. So the idea is to move them around. In the Arts Learning Program, there is no geographic restriction. So if a school from the north side of Minneapolis wanted to apply for an Arts Learning Grant, and part of that grant was to be used to go to something that was taking place in downtown or in the suburbs, to Minnetonka Center for the Arts or something like that, they could do that. There is no geographic restriction in that one program.
I think she was, I don't know about the size of the programs and what's available and how easy it is to get the grants, but she was concerned about why we had that restriction to go outside of the region, which clearly works very badly for the metropolitan region, which has so many performances, you know, has so many things compared to the rest of the state, and also probably has a heavier amount of deprived kids, or a goodly amount, let me say, of deprived kids.
so many things compared to the rest of the state. But what were you saying there again?
Well, you know, things like the Guthrie Theater, the Historical Society, all of the multiple theaters around.
We have the Opera House and the Ball of Twine.
Yes, I know. But
I'll grant you have a lot here.
Yeah. No, but and the problem is the difficult, as again I said, it's a point that was brought up by Representative Loeffler. Mm-hmm. And the problem is we have a lot of deprived kids. And so to say that they can't get any access, any assisted access to these things because it happens to be in the same region is, I think, a misguided rule.
But thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Jens.
Chair. Thank you,
Ms. Byron, for your report to us. And now we have a presentation by the Department of Natural Resources, and I believe Mr. Meyer is here. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much for allowing us to be here. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I have with me as well today Erica Rivers, Director of our Parks and Trails Division. The department is probably one of the few, if not the only, entity that has received money from all four areas of the Legacy Amendment. We received money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, the Clean Water Fund. In last fiscal year, we were able to receive a grant from the Historical Center, Historical Society, to replace some roofs out at Fort Snelling, Upper Bluff area. So we have a unique interest in the Legacy Amendment. We're very grateful it passed. I could not imagine what the state would look like right now if we did not have the source of funding to deal with these issues. Outdoor Heritage Fund, we participate through the Outdoor Heritage Council, or the Sartsams Outdoor Heritage Council. Just like any other entity would, we receive funding for projects, restoration, acquisition, protection, enhancement, and restoration. We also receive funding from the Clean Water Fund. That funding recommendations for that come through the Clean Water Council to the legislature, and also the governor's budget represents parts of those Clean Water Funds, which you will see as a bill. Parks and Trails Fund also behaves much like the Clean Water Fund, where the governor's budget has recommendations. Then the Legacy Advisory Committee provides guidance and coordination between the entities, Metro, Greater Minnesota, and the State Park System. We do have
Mr.
a website.
You get nothing from the arts, history, culture portion?
Not a direct, Mr. Chairman. Not a direct appropriation. We do participate in the grant opportunities that are available. And we recently received, I think it was $250,000 to do some work on some historical buildings, historical preservation. We do have a large number of historical sites and historical buildings within the park system, and we work very closely with the Historical Society on those facilities and trying to figure out how do we get the funding to rehab those.
All right, thanks. Continue.
Transparency of our legacy dollars is very important to us and also to the legislature. I know that on our website, if you just go to legacy or search legacy in the upper right hand corner, it brings you to our page. You can see there's a box where you can talk about where the money goes, and then DNR highlights by fund. This is also cross-referenced to the legacy website that the Legislative Coordinated Commission operates as well. We're in the process of updating these dollars, so if you go to this, if you click on where the money goes, for example, you will see it only goes to FY12 right now, but hopefully within the next couple of weeks it will be current with the latest FY13-14 spending dollars. Focusing on the Outdoor Heritage Fund really quickly here, we have legacy projects such as the Upper Mississippi UPM Forest Legacy Easement. That was one of the first projects that the council and the legislature actually funded out of that first year, protecting over 190,000 acres of working forest permanently and open to public hunting and recreation up in Grand Rapids and Aiken and St. Louis counties. Another exciting project we're working on is the St. Louis River Estuary Restoration, restoring the habitat function and water quality to the St. Louis River area right in the Duluth Bay and the Duluth Harbor. is very important to reestablishing that ecosystem, and we're doing that with other state agencies and federal funding. Accelerating proven conservation programs with innovation, prairie lands, grasslands, wetlands, shallow lakes, forests, aquatic habitats are some of the programs that we see on a yearly cycle. You'll see these programs are ongoing that have been funded over the past biennials through the council. And also acquisition through wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, and aquatic management natural areas are very important. I'm realizing I may need to get you an acronym cheat sheet for this committee as we talk about these presentations, so we'll work on that as well. Another important piece that we fund out of the legacy are the Conservation Partners Legacy Grants Program. Past years, this has been split up into two programs, one focusing on restoration in greater Minnesota, and then another conservation grants program focusing on metropolitan area open space and parklands for restoration and protection there. Currently, we've been able to impact over 140,000 acres to date. I know we'll be talking more about these activities when the bill does come before you, and our website does have more information. This graph here just shows historically for the past 4 years where we have been doing our allocations just by ecotype: prairie grasslands, wetlands, forests, fish, game, and wildlife habitat. And you can see the Conservation Partner Legacy Grants there as well, with just a little over $19 million to date going out to local partners. Just to touch base briefly on the Clean Water Legacy Fund, we provide information that leads to strategic investments, providing multiple benefits, looking at the hydrology as a major driver of water quality impairments. For some of the main opportunities we have are monitoring and assessment, watershed restoration and protection strategies, drinking water protection, non-point source implementation, and applied research and tool development. You can see in the allocation table there, FY08-09, it was kind of a ramping up period for us with about $4 million. And since then, it's been relatively stable between $18 and $20 million, where we're doing a lot of work monitoring and assessing our waters, which provides the information to other partners such as the Pollution Control Agency, Department of Agriculture and Watersheds, and other local units of government as to the conditions of the water and the improvements or the health benefits that we're healthier waters we're seeing through the benefits of the appropriation. Oops. Mr. Chairman, with that, I can stand for a few questions about our overall legacy funding. Otherwise, I thought it would be best be a good use of the committee's time to talk about the Division of Parks and Trails and the four pillars that exist there with our legacy funding.
Representative Torkelson.
A question for you, Mr. Chair. When are we going to review the governor's budget for like the Clean Water Fund? I assume we'll be doing that sometime.
I assume we'll be doing that fairly soon.
All right. But not today. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and at that time, we will be here with the Interagency Working Group and the Clean Water Council to discuss those budget recommendations. So.
All right. Continue.
If there are no other questions, members, I'll have Director Rivers review the Parks and Trails funding and programmatic activities related to legacy appropriations.
Identify yourself, please, Ms. Rivers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Erica Rivers. I'm the Director of Minnesota State Parks and Trails. Here today with the objective of giving you an overview of the Parks and Trails legacy proposals for 16 and 17, as well as to review our expenditures and the things we're really proud of back in 14 and 15 of our legacy appropriations. Just to begin, of course, the Minnesota State Park and Recreation and Trail System is a very large system. We have about 75 state parks and recreation areas all across the state, many of them in your districts, as well as 26 authorized state trails, 33 water trails, 1,500 public water accesses, a total of about 275,000 acres of land that's managed under the Division of Parks and Trails. We really consider ourselves to be at the center of Minnesota Department of Natural Resources missions, and that is a tripart mission of conservation, recreation, and promotion of local economies, mostly through the tourism industry. We follow in our allocations and use of Parks and Trails legacy funds, the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, which was developed back in 2011. And establishes four pillars under which all the implementing agencies of the Parks and Trails legacy divide monies. And those are really four different pillars. And on the slide here that I have in front of you, I'll just break down how Minnesota Department of Natural Resources breaks those pillars out. Starting clockwise, the blue pillar or the blue piece of pie there is connecting people with the outdoors. We allocate typically between 15% and 17%, and our proposal for 16-17 is about 16% with connecting people to the outdoors. And again, I'll highlight some of the things that we would propose to do with that funding into 16 and 17. The next piece of pie is acquire land and create opportunities. This is where we spend about 27% of legacy funds historically, as well as propose to do the same into the next biennium. This is acquire land on designated rails and trails corridors, as well as within state park boundaries. That final large piece of pie is green, and that is taking care of what we have. We propose to allocate about 57% of the funding to taking care of what we have. Many of our facilities were built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and we've loved them to death at this point. And so we want to renew some of those facilities into the future so that they are relevant to the next generation. That last piece of pie on the top there is coordinating with partners, and this is an off-the-top appropriation recommended by the Legacy Advisory Committee. And that is how we coordinate with Metropolitan Park System as well as the Greater Minnesota Commission to ensure that we create a seamless system of parks and trails across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Ms. Rivers, just to be a little more definitive on this, take care of what we have. Another word could be maintenance for that.
Correct.
And just wondering if you ever run into any conflict with the supplement directions in that category.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. We have policy internal to DNR to try very hard not to supplant and supplant existing funds, as well as things that we have traditionally done using general fund or lottery in lieu in the past.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, real quickly, Bob Meyer at the DNR again. The commissioner Landwehr has instituted an operational order, which for the department it almost has the same effect as law. It guides our operational activities within the department. They're published in the state register, and what Director River was mentioning was our operational order regarding legacy funds. I will provide the committee with a copy of that, because that clearly identifies how we treat each individual fund and how do we recognize or avoid the supplant versus supplement question. So thank you very much for your attention to that matter.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a further to that.
Ms. Rivers.
So within the Division of Parks and Trails, we have taken the position that things that we have typically done through standard operations and maintenance, the basic things to keep the doors open, the lights on, and the visitors coming through the doors, we try very hard not to use those operating dollars, basic operating dollars with legacy. Those things would include sweeping and mowing, basic bathroom and facility maintenance, paying the water and light bills. Those are the kind of things that we consider inappropriate for legacy spending. We also watch year over year things, programs that we have had a long time in the past that were not funded over time. Sometimes we reinstitute in new ways. An example of that would be some of our interpretive programs within the parks, things that were cut more than a decade ago, but we find great value in connecting people to the outdoors, have been reinstituted and repackaged in new ways and new approaches using legacy funds, for which we're really grateful.
Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Myers, or Mr. Myers and Ms. Rivers. I just want to give you kudos. I just think what the DNR has been doing with these parks, the camping classes and the fishing classes and the camper cabins and all the, you know, I see you've added mountain bikes to some of the parks. We don't know where it's appropriate. Geocaching for the goofballs that do that. And thinking
outside.
He's
talking about me, members of the committee.
And it's really clever. It's really dynamic. It's exciting. And I just challenge you to keep some of the things that Representative Kahn mentioned. Just to kind of reaching out to some of the changing populations. And I think it's and I know you're doing great. And just keep working on that. And if there's some legacy work that can be done in that area, too, to help with reaching out, think that'd be great for the future as our population changes in Minnesota. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn?
Well, one of the things, Mr. Chairman, one of the things on the issue of supplanting and supplementing is Representative Fabian, I guess he's not on the committee this year, but I think he was. Okay.
Not this one.
But one of the things that we've both are in agreement of is that it should be perfectly permissible to use legacy funds to help maintain anything that was originally purchased with legacy funds. And I wondered how you kind of do your maintenance, how you do those budgets. Do your legacy purchase entities just go with everything else? Are they kept in any kind of separate category?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, that would be allowable. Most of our legacy acquisitions, if you want to call it, are in the Fish and Wildlife Division, so we try to buy land and restore those. We've done a few legacy acquisitions, like LaSalle State Park or State Recreation Area, and Director Rivers can talk about the work that's been done there. I think some of those activities have been funded through legacy. So we do appreciate your support and recognition of those activities because they should support that. Another thing that we'll be talking about are conservation easements this session, I hope, and how do we fund the monitoring and enforcement of those easements into the future. The 190,000 acres of Blandon easements that were funded initially had a large appropriation that went along with that to provide for perpetual monitoring and enforcement of that easement. So under the taking care of what we have, not only in the Parks and Trails Fund, but in all of the funds, that's a great guiding principle I hope we can maintain. Thank you.
Thank you. Continue.
So I mentioned that I would like to, Mr. Chair, highlight some of the things that we're really excited about that we accomplished with the help of legacy dollars in 14 and 15, as well as some of our plans for 16 and 17. As we talked about, taking care of what we have is the biggest part of the sort of chunk of allocation for a legacy fund. And we really think about in this pillar of our work is really restoration and rehabilitation of our existing system. The top picture there is Itasca State Park, Bear's Paw Cabin. We were able to restore an old camp store using legacy funds this last year and create a rentable unit. That's right in the Bear Paw Campground, as well as restore and realign about 6 miles of trail through Itasca State Park. Just a drop-to-your-knees, gorgeous project winding through those big stately pines of Itasca State Park on this new bike trail. It's ADA accessible. Just a wonderful testament to the way we can use these legacy funds. We also have about 100 bridges within the state park and trail system that are over 100 years old. I think this committee has heard about that issue multiple times before. We're chipping away at that rehabilitation of those old bridges, and we're able to accomplish restoration of 8 of those last year. And then I want to tip my hat to Conservation Corps Minnesota. I see that Executive Director Len Price here. This last one is really the rehabilitation of native vegetation, native ecosystems within our state parks and on our state trails. A lot of this money or a lot of this restoration effort has been done with the great work of the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. DNR Parks and Trails remains very committed to, again, investing about $1 million each year for the Conservation Corps to continue that excellent work. With that, we have been able to restore about 600 acres of native habitats within Minnesota State Parks. That's about a 60% more native prairie than we were able to do prior to the legacy funds, and about 90% more invasive species work that we would not have been able to do but for the help of these legacy funds. Going into 16 and 17, we want to continue that work of really rehabilitating and making the old look new again, if you will. Our plans in the legacy priorities would include about 25 miles of state trail rehabilitation on some of our most highly sought-out destination trails of the Root River, the Sakata Singing Hills, and Glacial Lakes. We'd like to continue that bridge rehabilitation work. We're planning 3 more bridge rehabilitations in the next biennium, as well as continuing the great work, as I mentioned, with the restoration of Savannah and Prairie in particular across many of Minnesota state parks. Under the category of acquiring land and creating new opportunities, the focus here for us, as we've mentioned in previous appearances here at this committee, is really focusing on that next generation of recreationists. How do we get more families outdoors? How do we get more young families with parents in the 25 to 49 year range out and recreating with their families? To do this, we really think that we need to continue to create new opportunities within our existing system, respecting the old and the traditional that is part of the state parks and trails system throughout the state of Minnesota, but also looking toward the future and appealing to those, as Representative Lilly mentioned, new types of recreation, paddle boarding, mountain biking, kayaking, this sort of thing. As far as 14 and 15, the things we're really most proud of and excited about, 6 miles of new trail was developed in Browns Creek. This is a testament to two different legacy funding opportunities. In 12 and 13, we used legacy funds to acquire this old Minnesota Zephyr rail line. In 14 and 15, we used legacy funds to develop it into an ADA-accessible, really nice amenity. I hope that many of you will be able to join us on June 6th as we dedicate this wonderful trail in northern Washington County. The last two on this slide are really, again, a testament to our attempt to really get new users out into the state parks, and this is by providing some really sort of primitive camping experiences where people can get outdoors for those first introductory experiences but have a few of the creature comforts of home. We do this through these one-room cabins, we call camper cabins, as well as new to the system this year, very popular out west. We're giving them a try here, the yurts. We've got those pilot projects in three different state parks. So that's what we're most proud of in this past biennium. And then perhaps to Representative Lilly's point, this pillar of connecting people to the outdoors. I mentioned we of all the implementing agencies, that is Metro, Greater Minnesota, and State Park System, spend the most amount of our allocation on connecting people with the outdoors. We know and we recognize the decline in outdoor recreation in Minnesota and across the nation, and it's imperative that we start addressing that by providing new opportunities and connecting people with the resources that are wonderful resources that are here in the state of Minnesota. We do this in 14 and 15, we'll continue in 16 and 17, largely through our ICANN program that Representative Lilly mentioned. We have 5 different ICANN programs. They include camping, paddling, climbing, mountain biking now, as well as I Can Fish and archery in the parks. So we have a number of different programs that really try to reduce the barriers for getting people outdoors, and we sort of have a missing generation here, unfortunately, where families have not been outside recreating, and so we have to reconnect them with the skills and abilities to do that again. We also use this pillar to do things like the Naturalist Corps, which is, as I mentioned, reinstating a naturalist program in some of the parks that haven't had it over the course of the last decade. And we've also used it to connect people through new technologies and social media. We have a new Park Finder app on our website, as well as a very active and engaging Twitter, as well as Facebook accounts. As I mentioned, we continue to want to emphasize that ICANN program. It's been very successful in bringing diverse groups out into the outdoors. And then new this year, we're also proposing to have a diversity and inclusion initiative that will focus specifically. Mr. Chair.
Before, I'm going to let Representative Pinesman ask it now.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rivers, I just want to take you back a little bit. I was going to try to interject, but I kind of missed my spot or my opportunity. In a number of other, well, in the Environmental Policy Committee, there's been some discussion of the camper cabins. Are those the cabins that I'm hearing a little bit about from my resorts and other places where there's some concern about competition?
Ms. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, representatives of the committee, yes, I believe you probably have heard a bit about camper cabins. These are one-room cabins that have typically 2 bunk beds, a table, and a outdoor cooking facility. They also have, they do not have bathrooms or kitchens within them. They have them sort of down the road. And so we don't really view these as competition with local resorts, but rather an opportunity to actually get people outdoors and hopefully up to Greater Minnesota. I know you're in the Cuyuna Lakes area, that direction, and experiencing those places and hopefully coming back and spending additional dollars in those locations. Our yurts are even slightly more primitive than the camper cabins. These are actually temporary structures that have soft sides and hard roof, and are just one room, again, facilities without cooking or bathrooms within them.
Representative Heinzman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Ms. Rivers, unfortunately, there is some concern is to regard to the potential competitive issue there. Is there a lot of plans, or are there any plans, are you aware of, to expand the cabins in your area?
Ms. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heitzman, we, for a long time in the Division of Parks and Trails, have had a long-term plan of about 200 cabins within the whole system. I think we're up close to 100 right now. And we don't have plans to expand beyond that.
Representative Heisman?
I guess, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Rivers, just I guess want to continue to express the concern of those folks, because it is an issue that is continuing to build some frustration amongst folks in the resorts business. And hopefully there might be some discussion about maybe limiting it to either current rate or maybe just slightly higher, over 100. Because you said over 100 is where you're at 100 right now, and you're trying to expand it and double it, is what you're telling me.
That has been the plan, yes. Okay. Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rivers. Continue.
I just want to assure the committee in the most animated of terms that the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and the Division of Parks and Trails aspires to help uplift local economies by drawing tourism dollars to local communities, and we're not really interested in competing with. So I would like to continue to have an engaged conversation with the Minnesota Resort Association, as we have over a number of years, to ensure that we are are offering complementary services and not competitive ones.
Just a quick follow-up.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rivers, okay, then, just to clarify then, if that discussion were to maybe reinforce some of the things I'm hearing, would there be some room then to maybe amend the proposed 200 number?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heitzman.
Ms. Rivers.
Yes, absolutely. We have for a long time thought that it might be a good idea to actually do some user surveys on the use of camper cabins, as well as what the people who use those facilities, how they spend their money when they're in the local communities, as well as their intentions for future use.
All right, continue, please.
Thank you for those excellent questions, Mr. Chair.
Excellent.
As I was mentioning with the connecting people to the outdoors, the diversity and inclusion is something that we're very interested in moving forward. We recognize that about 40% of our users of state parks and trails come from the metropolitan area, and that the state demographics office is indicating that there will be a large shift in the makeup demographics of the state of Minnesota over the course of the next 20 years. And because there are so many associated health and physical benefits to outdoor recreation, we want to make sure that those opportunities are available to people, all people of Minnesota. And so we're proposing to do a cultural competency and inclusion initiative within Department of Natural Resources, partnering with some of the excellent work that has been done with the Metropolitan Parks System, to make sure that we are offering facilities as well as programs that are appealing to a diversity of Minnesota's population. And then finally, in the connecting people to the outdoors, we propose to use additional funds for innovation, doing some more research on customer needs, as well as providing technological applications to ensure that we are connecting people to the outdoors in that next generation. And then finally, I mentioned that little sliver, that purple slice of the pie, which is an off-the-top appropriation recommended by the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee. This committee is made up of the people you see on your screen here, 18 people, 9 appointed by we call them implementing agencies, that's Metropolitan Council, DNR, and Greater Minnesota, and then 9 ad hoc members chosen with them. This group of people has their eye on the legacy plans, the 25-year legacy plan, and ensuring that the implementing agencies are honoring the commitments and the directions and priorities that were established in that plan. So this chunk of money, this little slice, is really to uphold the work of this committee, as well as do two really important projects: cooperative research between the three entities to ensure that we're all comparing apples to apples and that we are using similar methodologies when we're doing research on customer desires. Again, with the intention of creating that seamless system of parks and trails through the metropolitan, greater Minnesota, and state system. And then second of all, to create an integrated web application that will allow interchange of that information so that we can create user interfaces that create that seamless system for parks and trails that we all desire. And that is pretty much what I just said. That would be what emphasis on the project highlights for next year. And then finally, I just wanted to give highlight two documents that are in your packet today. One is the six-year accomplishment report from the Parks and Trails implementing agencies. It gives you a nice little breakdown of how each of the implementing agencies, Metropolitan, DNR, and Greater Minnesota, split their funds between those four pillars I mentioned. And then second of all, the Parks Minnesota Parks, DNR Parks and Trails legacy report. The last page of this report provides a legislative requested list of priorities for the DNR portion of the legacy funds and how we would propose to allocate those, both first of all across those four pillars, as well as secondly according to our system plan, which a picture is on the screen right now. System plan is DNR's attempt after many years of work to really divide our system into three different categories, if parks and trails, as well as water access sites.
Thank you. You're not anticipating any change in the park percentages, are you?
40-40-20?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair? I sure hope not. I would just like to maybe give you a quick update on that. For those who are new to the committee and maybe aren't aware, Representative Erdahl wisely requested that the three implementing agencies, that's the Metropolitan Council, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and the Met Council, get together and work out a strategy for splitting the legacy funding several years ago. We had nine people, three from each organizing agency, get together and over the course of about 6 months had many fruitful discussions about the legacy mission and the 25-year legacy plan, and came to an agreement to split the legacy funds 40% with the DNR for the State Parks and Trails System, 40% for the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails System, and 20% for the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails System. That commitment was reiterated a few weeks ago between the implementing agencies. We are all very comfortable with the 40-40-20 split again.
That's good news.
Thank you.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who I might be specifically directing my question to, so Mr. Meyer or Ms. Rivers, whichever, might have some knowledge on this. Right near my district is a project, is a bike trail system known as Cuyuna, and you might be familiar with it. They're looking at doing some expansion, and while visiting with them recently, the question came up as to, through that expansion, what revenue streams are they utilizing or looking towards to try to do that, and it didn't seem as though either there was maybe a misunderstanding or maybe there was not a path through legacy to accomplish that goal. So I'm wondering what the criteria is for folks looking for funding for a project through Parks and Trails through legacy, and then also if their project wasn't didn't fit that criteria, why not?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Rivers.
Representative Heinzman, I again point to you to the final report that we gave you. And you'll notice that Cuyuna Country is in the middle column, providing additional trail development and expansion for mountain biking. Mm-hmm. So we do have intention. We have allocated $100,000 in each of the past 2 years of legacy funding. We have renewed that commitment into the future. We propose to do the same, $100,000 each year through legacy. The plan that was developed by the International Mountain Bike Association was developed in concert with local communities and the Department of Natural Resources. We're really enthusiastic and excited about that plan. In order to implement that plan, the DNR will have to revise its master plan for the Cuyuna Lakes State Recreation Area. And we feel that $100,000 in the next 2 years will allow us to do the pre-planning that's necessary to develop those trails, and then hopefully have that pre-planning and pre-design ready so that it would be ready for a bonding appropriation either next year or the next biennium.
Anything else? Anything else from you guys? Well then, seeing no other questions, we look forward to seeing you again at our next meeting. Too late.
Sorry.
Representative Kahn.
One of the issues that we were under discussion with last year, and I think it's been resolved, was that the Metropolitan Council had some really good criteria for what were the characteristics of a regional trail. And we were concerned that the Greater Parks and Trails Council didn't have similar ones. How has that been? How has that been worked out? And how do we look at the fact? How do we determine what a regional trail is in for that group?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. Thank you for that excellent question. I would have to defer some of that conversation to the Greater Minnesota Commission. My understanding is that they have delivered a report to this committee that outlines what their criteria are for regional parks and trails of significance in Greater Minnesota now. They have scored those with a pretty robust technical analysis process, and they have a suite of, maybe a couple dozen that they consider of Greater Minnesota regional significance. So I would invite you to ask that the organization to come and present that information to you.
Mr. Chairman, is this something that's been delivered to us that I just haven't paid attention to, or don't we have it yet, or what?
I'm sorry, I've got two conversations.
The question was this something that we've had and I just haven't paid attention to, or we don't have it yet, or what's up?
They will be making a presentation to us. And they did drop off a bunch of packets in my office, and prior to their being here, you'll receive them. Okay. Anything else? Well, seeing none, I believe...
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Meyer, you'll be back next week. And we'll have more discussion. Otherwise, this case is closed.